Welcome to the Distance Hiker Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Yoshwood, and I interview long-distance hikers just like you and me. My aim is to inspire your next long-distance hike, wherever that may be, or however you choose to do it. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to episode number one of the Distance Hiker Podcast. It's really, really nice to have you listening, and thank you for joining me today. This podcast has been hugely inspired by the small Facebook group I set up around a year ago, which has since grown to, at the time of recording, nearly 8,500 members. It's the nicest community of people I've ever seen online, and I just saw so many interesting stories about people, ordinary people walking long distance trails, that I just wanted to talk to people and share those stories with the world because I just felt they needed sharing. So here I am today recording my first episode, or the first episode recorded, but I'm sharing it with you. I really hope you enjoy today's show. I had the pleasure of interviewing Chris and his dog Moose. Now, it was a real pleasure to record the interview, and I do have to apologize for the introduction, which was somewhat butchered by myself. I'll admit I panicked when I hit the record button, and it shows, but I left it in there because I thought it was quite amusing after listening to it a little while later. So I'm not going to go into the big introduction of Chris and Moose. I'm going to let the podcast do that because Chris introduces himself and what he's doing with his coastal walk wonderfully. But I hope you enjoy the first episode. And if you do enjoy it, feedback. If you don't enjoy it, also feedback. I'm happy to listen to any sort of criticism or feedback, regardless of what that may be. But either way, thank you so much for joining me today. This personally is a big milestone for me that I'm recording this now. I'll admit, pre-recording this introduction, I have recorded several before and deleted them all, so hopefully this one sticks. But anyway, thank you and enjoy the show. So, Chris, welcome to the Distance Hiker Podcast. This is episode number one. We've had a little bit of a chat before the podcast began, and I started asking you probably all the questions I wanted to ask in the podcast. So I'm going to have to get you to recap a little bit, so I do apologize for that. First question I've got for you is, you initially wanted to do the Camino walk, long distance hike, but you ended up doing this particular walk, which is walking the coastline of Britain. What was the main inspiring point that made you want to walk the coast of the UK?
Hi, Matthew. straight in at the deep end. Straight in at the deep end. There were a few reasons.
Yeah.
I'd never considered myself to be a long distance walker or an adventurer, or
okay,
sat there and had secret aspirations to, yeah, bring out the Ranulph Fiennes in myself. The Camino dream started with it started by watching a film called The Way by Emilio Estevez.
Okay.
It's got Martin Sheen in it.
Okay.
And it tells the story of the Camino de Santiago, which, for, I would imagine most people listening to this will know what that is. But if you don't, it's a very ancient pilgrimage trail, and there are loads of them as well. So the best way to describe it is, there is a city in Spain called Santiago, and then if you kind of like think of a spider web, there are routes in from all the major European countries into that. The most common one in from France is called the French Way, and it's about 800 kilometers. And I watched this film about this guy who does it to honor his son. And at the end of it, I kind of thought, wouldn't it be great to do something like that?
Sure.
And that is usually where I start getting into trouble.
Okay.
Wouldn't it be great to do something like that? Because it then starts niggling at me and going, well, why don't you then? So I started thinking about it more and more. And I was working. I wasn't really taking it too seriously, but it kept niggling away. And then a few years ago, Moose came into my life. So okay. The other half of what I do is Moose. He's my mastador. He's a Mastiff Labrador cross dog. Okay. And anyway, the opportunity arose for me to do it. I had enough money to do it. I'd managed to save up a little bit of money, and I had a bit of time off work. And I thought, do the Camino. And then I thought, taking a dog over to Spain, where my Spanish isn't great, and there's other things like, you know, there's lots of wild bears and dogs, and I couldn't speak to a vet anyway if he got ill, and it started to get really complicated. So I thought, you know what? What's easier than walking coast paths in Britain? Because I've done that, right? Yeah. Everybody's done that on your holidays. Yes. You know, you go on holiday, walk a bit of the coast path, and it's all nicely marked out. So I rather naively and stupidly quit my job. I was living in rented accommodation, so I got rid of that, put all my stuff in storage. And then before I knew it, I was stood on the coast path with me and Moose.
Wow.
And that's kind of where that started.
Yeah. I mean, the journey wasn't quite so sudden, was it? I mean, I'm assuming there was a lot of build up and a lot of preparation prior to that. Because in your book, you mentioned about a midlife crisis. So how did the midlife crisis come about?
I think the midlife crisis is something that's building in anybody. I wouldn't have said that it was one sort of tipping point.
Okay.
It was a glorious convergence of events, which happen loads when you're young, but as you get older, they tend to be fewer and fewer. And like I've mentioned, I don't have kids. Mm. I had a little bit of savings, and by savings, I don't mean I had hundreds of thousands of pounds. I had a couple of grand in the bank, which I'm not saying is not a lot of money, but it were a couple of grand. Yeah. And they were restructuring at work, and they wanted to talk to me about the restructure of the team and everything. Okay. And I just thought, it's not for me. They'd done it quite a lot.
Okay.
So I decided to step away from the business. Mm. So I was actually sat there thinking, looking for another job. And I thought, well, why rush into it? Mm. And then my girlfriend at the time, we very amicably separated.
Yep.
And I thought, hang on, you are about as young and as you're going to get.
Yes.
And fancy free. So that happened in the April.
Okay.
And then I thought, actually, what can I really, really do about this?
And so this was in a bit of thought. April, which year?
2018.
2018, right, okay.
Yeah. So I did actually think then, what should I do? You know, seriously about it.
Yes.
And I just couldn't get this thing out of my head about walk around Britain. That sounds really good, walk around Britain. And it just kept eating away at me until before I knew it, I'd liveried all my t-shirts up, I'd chosen a few charities to support on my way around, I put as little thought into it as was necessary, not to overthink it and put myself off doing it in the first place, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. And was there like the move that initially gave you the idea of doing the Camino, which you decided not to do, was there something that inspired the particular walk around Britain at all, or was it just that something you were aware of, like you said, walking coastal paths, and you just, you know, you saw it as an opportunity to do something that was close to home?
I've always liked Britain. Yes. I have, in the fact that I very rarely seek to go abroad on holiday. I mean, I've been to a few places, but I always think that we undervalue where we are. I don't kind of throw that out as an accusation. I think everybody's guilty of it.
Yeah.
Even when I lived in Manchester, I very rarely went round and did all of the Manchester tourist attractions because I live there. Why would I?
Yes.
And I found that when I moved to Bath, it was surprising the number of people that I work with that were born and raised and grew up in Bath that had never been to the Roman Baths either. I think it's just a thing we do. We just don't appreciate what's around us as much as we would if we went away somewhere.
Agreed. Guilty is charged with that completely. It's too easy to look
overseas. I think
everybody
is. It's very easy. And it's just one of those things. The one thing that did strike me is the real richness, because I've lived around the UK quite a lot. So I've lived in Scotland, Wales, and Surrey, and loads of places. But and it's always struck me that there is we've got such diversity and such beauty all around us. We live on a great little island.
Yes.
We really, really do. So I thought, it was convenient. I spoke the language. There'd be no messing around with currency, you know. And if things really, really got dire and something happened beyond my control, that I was a train journey away. I could pick up the phone and call for help and that kind of thing. So there was a bit of the safety net aspect about it as well.
And that's really, really interesting. And I can see why you did it based on all of that. And obviously, you've done it with a dog in tow as well. So, so how with Moose coming along in that, how's the planning work with a dog on a long distance trail? Because with most of us doing these things, it's easy. You're thinking about yourself and potentially, you know, a friend or a family who's on the trail with you, who obviously, unless their kids will look after themselves. But you've got, in this case, a dependent, really, albeit an animal, but a dog is still a dependent. So how did that work in terms of the planning and also the packing? I'm interested to know sort of how much extra you had to pack with a dog.
It took me a while at the beginning to gauge weight. And to be clear, I, when we set off, Moose had, well, he still does, he carries around a set of panniers. But I'm very particular about what Moose has in his panniers. He has his bowls, he has a brush, he carries his doggy bags, so his poo bags, for when I need those. And on the other side, he carries his rainproofs and his waders, and he carries a little first aid kit for himself. Okay. All in all, if the thing weighs a kilo, that's it. He does not carry his own food. I need to emphasize really clearly that a dog, despite the fact that he's the size of a horse, and he's a big dog, he's not a beast of burden. He's a domesticated animal. So he takes some of the bulk off me. The food was the trickiest part. Food, and I suppose planning that out. When I first started, I had a shocking estimation of what was necessary and what was light. So as some people listening to this might have heard, there's a really fantastic gadget out there called a BioLite stove.
And they use
sticks that you collect from the forest, and there's an electrode in there, so that the fire heats it up and it charges a battery on the side so you can charge your phone up.
Sure.
Brilliant, right?
Yeah. Great invention.
I'm out there.
Yeah.
Fantastic. It weighs a kilo.
Which is quite a lot by standard of a stove.
I didn't know that at the time. So I'm carrying one of them, and I'm carrying my travel guitar and all sorts of other really, really necessary stuff.
Sure. Right?
And then by the time I got, I'd say by the time I got less than 100 miles in, I'm there like literally getting rid of stuff left, right, and center, trying to hone it all down. I'd say by the time I got to the end of the Southwest Coast Path, I had my weight, my carrying weight ratio down to a fine art.
Brilliant.
So but
what was the before and after weight?
I don't know, but to give you an example, I had, in order to get my rucksack, I'm not exaggerating here, I literally had to do this. I had to, with two hands, prop my rucksack up against a fence or something, sit down, and then hutch the butt of my ass up against the base of the rucksack, put on the straps, put on the cross strap, and then I had to roll on the side, get onto my hands and knees, and I've then stand
there.
Up.
Oh, I've been there. Yeah, that's the, yeah, it was a, you had a probably, I'm guessing, about 20 to 25 kilos on your back if you happen to do that. Yeah.
Now I can swing it over my shoulder with one hand.
Which is what you should do. Yeah. Oh, interesting. So how many days did you have to walk with that amount of weight? Because, I mean, even by the fittest and most experienced walkers' standards, that's difficult going with that kind of weight on your back.
The problem I had was not the distance in the day. The problem I had was where I started. I started in Portishead, which is just south of Bristol. So I hit the Southwest Coast Path after about 10 days. So the very, very first real tough terrain I got was across Exmoor. And as it turns out, the tallest cliff peaks in England, I believe they are. And I really, really felt it. I really felt it. But I struggled on. I was doing about 8 miles a day. I didn't know whether that was good or bad at the time. The inclines are quite severe. And like I say, it probably took until I got, well, I remember doing my last cull when I got to Poole. And that was when I just literally had enough. And I got rid of things like the plastic emergency blanket that you don't need.
I know the one,
And strangely enough, it was things like, I actually started getting really, really tight with it. So things like, I went through my first aid kit and I thought, I don't need three bandages, I need one. I'm not in the Sahara, I need one bandage and I need a few plasters. And I cut off things like straps and just useless stuff that was with it. And strangely enough, I piled it all on the bed of the travel lodge, and I picked it up, and I reckon, you know, there was a good 200-300 grams just in things like straps, buckles, you know, labels of stuff that they stitch on, that they always tend to put on like a rubber, a rubber label that they then stitch on the garment. Get rid of them. Attack them all with your knife and get sharp.
It's amazing how much that cumulative kind of amount of weight adds up over, you know, over a number of items. And even by taking away the small things which you think, oh, this only weighs a few grams, you know, once you've added all those few grams together in 10 different items, you're looking at a kilo worth of, you know, weight loss here and there. So
it was strange. I met up with a couple of other coastal walkers in February in 2019, and we were comparing notes and stuff. And I remember one of them turning around to me, and he showed me this really lightweight spork that he had, and it's one of these titanium ones that you can balance on the tip of your finger.
I know.
Weighs something like 20 grams. And I still had a traditional spoon with me for my food. And we just got talking, and it was kind of like, you know, if you can get into the mindset, if you can half the weight of every single piece of kit you carry,
no matter
what it is. So if you've got a knife, think and just see whether you can get one that's half the weight. If you've got a bowl, see if you can get one that's half the weight. And if you do that across all your kit, you are literally going to half what you're carrying.
Interesting.
So you're really right. Those little changes make the world a difference.
And back to the dog food as well. I mean, I don't have a dog. Admittedly, we've strongly considered getting a dog, like a lot of people have during the last year. We didn't pull through on that commitment and decided it wasn't for us at this point in our lives. But obviously, we've considered the you know, the cost of having a dog, and also how much food do they eat. Now, that's easy when you can put the dog's food in a pantry or in a cupboard somewhere. But what about when you're on the trail? How much food, especially for a large dog, did you have to carry? Because I think some people, there's definitely some dog owners in the community, and obviously plenty of dog owners walk long distances, and it might be quite interesting for them to know how much they need to carry.
There is. It's a complicated issue, so I'll break it down into a few bits, really. So we'll start with the dog food.
Yes.
For me, I always carry enough that if I need to, I've got five or six meals.
Now,
those are five or six rubbish meals, mind you. They're not like stews or anything. I'm talking like I'd have things like super noodle packets, something that's lightweight. And if it really hit the fan, I could actually stop somewhere and at least I've got something to fill me up out of desperation.
Okay.
With Moose, I can't really do that.
No, of course not.
And he's a big dog. Mm. I have a little... So I'd carry, he has a mix of dry food and wet food.
Okay.
And I'd carry enough with me.
Yes.
For 4 days. 4 days worth of dog food.
Okay.
Now, when I started getting down to his last day, that's when I knew I had to hunt for more.
Sure.
And that was considerable weight. So he'd have a equivalent of a standard bean-sized tin. Although they're generally trays now, so but that would be his wet food content, and then I'd have dry biscuits with me, and he'd have probably a decent cup and a half full per meal, and he'd have two meals a day.
So
that was what I was carrying, and that constituted a lot of the weight that I was carrying as well.
Would you be carrying extra water for the survey as well?
That's the other thing. So I actually, again, got a little bit smarter with this as I was walking. Dogs have a lot better constitution for contaminants than it does with humans, where we're actually built quite soft by comparison. In the fact that, you know, a dog, their stomachs are designed to handle raw meat. That's how robust their systems are.
Yes.
So provided that you understand where you are and you're aware of where the water off run is coming from, it's quite safe for them to drink stream water. I mean, in many cases, if you've got a decent filter like a Sawyer filter, it's good for us as well.
Yes.
But as long as the runoff isn't coming from where there's grazing cattle and all that usual kind of stuff, he could drink from streams.
Oh, handy, of course.
But if it's hot and you're on flat beaches, which I don't know whether anybody remembers 2018, it was very, very hot that year.
Yes, it was.
And so when I was coming across places like Breen and things like that, and some of the beaches of Cornwall, I had to carry 3 litres of water, and some of that was for him as well. What I did the most with regards to that was I actually altered my walking my walking habits.
Okay. So, how was that?
Well, fortunately, we were coming through Cornwall and Devon and all those nice touristy beachy places. Ah. And the RNLI do this wonderful thing of building their lookout huts on stilts.
Oh, okay.
And they're really great guys. So we used to just hide underneath their huts. And if anything, I'd turn around to them and ask them whether or not they could charge up my batteries. And
oh,
stuff
brilliant.
Like that.
Yeah.
So they were really great. And we just kept out of the heat. So Moose would sleep during the day and then we'd walk in the early evening and in the late evening as well.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Because obviously most people would tend to get their head down and just march through the heat. But I suppose you don't have that luxury.
Can't do that with a dog, especially with one his size with a heat stroke. And then the other thing was, like I alluded to, I had a store of savings, so I always made sure I had enough for a vet.
Yep.
He was fully vaccinated. He had his Bravecto and his Milbemax and stuff like that with me. He's fully insured as well. So
that's really interesting. That's really good to know.
If you're really, really lucky.
Yeah. Oh, has he come say hello?
No, Sosloy, stop barking now. There
you go. I was wondering if we'd ever get a hello or something. I was going to ask you, but that's a shame. He's not quite ready for that.
But no. There are considerations, but I'm making it sound so much gloomier than I really have to say
like
this.
That.
Now, one thing I have to say is. Coastal walking can be a lonely business. There were times that I don't regret anything about it, and it was a fantastic experience. But I'd be lying if there were times when I'd sit there perched looking out, you know, over the sea and at the sun setting, you know, after a beautiful day, and there was a little piece of me that was just thinking, really nice to share this with somebody. And then Moose would kind of squirrel his head underneath my arm and he'd rest his head on my lap. And I was. There is no companionship like it. And it was a wonderful experience doing it with Moose.
Bonding experience, I can imagine. Yeah. I mean, what I particularly enjoyed when I was reading through some of the book is how you put words into Moose's mouth, which I thought was really entertaining and brought us alive, because something as not a dog owner myself, but I can kind of imagine that he does have things he says, and he has a kind of a narrative, and he does say things, but you know, so to read that as the reader was really nice, and kind of added a whole kind of dimension to him as a dog, and really kind of brought him out as a real character in the story that you're writing at the moment.
Oh, that's really kind of you to say. It certainly feels that way. You know, you kind of get this thing. Anybody that's done any sort of, you know, walk or venture in some manner, you know, you do get that little kind of like child inside you that you know feels like, you know, you're on a quest.
Yeah, of course.
I can well imagine there were times when I was probably actually having dialogue with Moose, because he's quite vocal in his own way. And to the passerby that we were walking past, we must have looked like mental people, you know. this really dirty, somewhat shop-soiled kind of walker, you know, stinking up the coast path, walking down the trail, talking to his dog. So.
I'm sure it didn't look that bad, but I mean, you're probably one of many along the South West coast path anyway.
Yeah.
So I got another question. In terms of before you started on the walk, was there a feeling you were chasing, or a particular idea of what it would look like when walking? So maybe something that was inspired by watching the film, because obviously when you do these things, you visualize yourself doing it. And how did that differ from the actual reality of walking?
I was very determined throughout everything I do with regards to the walk to always put on a very, very optimistic face and a very chirpy front as well. Only because it's one thing doing it for yourself, and don't get me wrong, I can turn around to you and say, oh, I was doing it for the adventure of it all and the charity of it all and all everything that we were raising money for and all the rest of it, but you know what, I was doing it for myself.
Of course you were.
Absolutely was.
Yeah, and 100, you should be doing it for yourself, otherwise there's no point. It's got to be you first, and then everything else secondary.
And that was kind of it. But I thought, if I'm going to share this with people, I want to share the best of what I experienced, not the worst. So I was determined not to be one of these people going, oh, it was a bloody horrible day today, and my feet hurt, and look at my blisters.
Yeah.
But I'd be lying to you if there weren't days when I sat there exhausted with my feet absolutely killing me.
Yes.
And there were some times when I absolutely felt like crying. I was so tired and I've been out in the wild so long and I was so exhausted and it had just been a bad day for whatever reason. Those happen, but that happens in everyday life. It's not really all that different. So it's and then there were times when you reflect back on it, same with old camping trips, you know, they're miserable when you do it.
Course,
but
yes.
You look back with rosy hindsight and they're great.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was an indescribable experience.
Wow.
So much so that I'm currently in the planning phases of doing it again in 10 days.
Of course, yes. So when is the actual 10 days from now? So just towards the end of the month, you're going to start again.
Yeah, on the 28th.
28th. Start, so. Oh, wow. Okay, not too long to go. Not too long to go. And you mentioned when we were chatting before I hit record that you have a extended period of leave, a sabbatical from your current employer now to do this. So that kind of answers one of my questions I had for you, which is sort of how do you fund this? But I suppose during that sabbatical, you're not being paid. So was it just a matter of saving really, really hard in order to do this? Or?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I really want to touch on that because that's something that kind of, there's lots of stuff on Netflix at the moment and it's, you know, these people that buy these buses and then go for 12 months on these, you know, living remotely thing.
Yeah.
And it's really great that they do that. The one thing they never talk about and the one thing that everybody's dying to know is how the bloody hell do you do it?
Because it's not the sexy thing to talk about, but I think it's really, really important because...
I do. I do as well. So... initially, like I said, I had a few thousand pounds saved up, not massive amounts. I think in the end it was 6,500 that I started.
Okay.
And with that, I bought all my kit. I bought my livery. So I had T-shirts with the charities on and everything else. So all that was for myself. And then this is the key thing. When you're trying to plan it and you're living in the real world or whatever, you're in the wrong economy to give you a decent sort of like idea as to the reality of what it's going to cost.
Okay.
So by that I mean when you're here and you know when you're in your house you've got your rent or mortgage or whatever and then you've got your council tax and gas and electric and this that and the other blah 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 blah. Well, when I first started walking I actually gave all that up. So I sold my truck so I didn't have fuel costs. I didn't have MOT. I didn't have tax on my car because I didn't have a car anymore.
Yeah.
And then I gave up my tenancy because I was a private renter.
Okay.
So overnight, by giving up my tenancy, I didn't have rent. I didn't have council tax, water rates, gas, electric, internet. The only bill I had all the way around was my mobile phone bill.
Wow. Okay.
And that was it. And food costs.
Yeah. And what about things like storage? Because obviously you gave up your tenancy, but you have stuff. Did you have to?
I did. I smiled really nicely at lots of friends and I sold the rest.
Oh, okay.
No, people were very kind and said, you can stick a bit in my loft. So I dispersed all my stuff amongst a lot of my friends who were very kind enough to store it for me. Thinking about it, when you're actually doing a walk like that, as long as you've got all your kit up in advance, £50 a week is a fortune to live on.
Okay.
I mean, you just think how much would it, even if you were eating takeout every night.
Yes.
You know, your biggest expense was every once in a while I'd go on a campsite or I'd go in a hotel for a shower.
Okay. That, and the rest was wild camp to as you went, I'm assuming.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, well, okay. And do you find it difficult or have you found it difficult so far to find wild camping spots or was it relatively straightforward? And what was your
It depends where you go. It depends where you go and how picky you are. And I'm quite picky. So it's for a couple of reasons. I didn't want the wrong attention coming towards Moose. And bear in mind, you know, he's, like I said, he's a big dog. He's a mastiff. So he doesn't look like the sort of pushover sort of dog that that you'd like to get onto the wrong side of.
Yeah.
Not that he's aggressive.
He just looks the part, doesn't he?
When he wants to, and yeah. I don't discourage that. There were some times at night when we were sleeping in the tent, and a beam of somebody's torchlight had hit the tent. He'd go bananas and start barking, and then they go, "Bloody hell, there's a dog in there!" and then run off. And it's like that was.
You bet you were glad for that. Yeah, of course, it's exactly the reaction you want, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So I'd say, starting off from where I set off, Portishead. Yeah, I mean, all across Somerset, North Devon, Cornwall, all around that peninsula, that was fine. It started getting trickier as I came into probably Southampton was the first time it got challenging.
Okay.
Because the walking distances. So for those of you that don't know, Southampton and Portsmouth are right next to each other.
Yes.
So odds on you're going to be camping near a city, and they're at least one night.
Very built up areas,
They really, really are. Yeah. And it's it was just about finding the right camp spot out the way. In the end, I didn't opt for wild camping. I ended up getting a travel lodge in Southampton and a travel lodge in Portsmouth. It sounds like I'm a big travel lodge advocate.
Well, cheap and cheerful, and they take dogs, don't they?
Take dogs. Yes. That's their defining quality. I could take Moose in there. With regards to the other built-up areas, it's challenging. So around the Thames, when I crossed the Thames at Gravesend, that was tricky. There was a lot of industry around there. I was really picky, and I'd find some out-of-the-way spots, and I'd always camp at least a couple of miles away from a city or from a big town. Mm. And that seemed to serve me well. And the other thing that I did was I had a flag with me, a little white flag that's had, you know, Chris and Moose's Waggy Walk on it. And I used to peg that out in front of my tent.
Okay.
So people could see what it was. And if they disturbed it, it was more out of interest than anything else.
Oh, I see. Okay. That's interesting. And so actually with that, these kinds of experiences tend to attract attention. So you were sharing what you were doing on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I'm interested to kind of see what has that garnered any sort of publicity along the way as you've been going, or any sort of interesting relationships that have been forged on the trail. What kind of how's that kind of materialized into a growing amount of publicity for the group, the walk you've been doing? Because it naturally comes anyway with this kind of thing.
It does. I'd say when you start talking about a walk of this nature. Mm. People are interested.
Of course.
People are interested.
It's and aspirational.
But they also want to get involved in some way. And they want to meet up and things like that. And what started out as being very much about the countryside and about my own sense of freedom and going on adventure, it actually very quickly became about the people I met.
Okay.
And as you talk to, which I've no doubt you will, as you talk to more long distance walkers, you'll find they'll all say exactly the same thing. Mm. And that is the overwhelming feeling is about the people that you meet. They want to tell you their stories. They want to get involved. They want to support you. They want to help you find out more. So they naturally generate interest. Along the way, I had a couple of interviews that were set up by people that just used to follow me on Facebook. You know, such a person from the BBC wants to speak to you. I spoke to somebody from BBC Radio Bristol.
Okay.
I was in a couple of the local papers coming through Devon and Cornwall, and again going up through Lincolnshire and Northumberland, and it happens from time to time. Yeah.
And do you reach out for the newspaper publicity through press releases, or do you just let it come to you as you're going and through the?
It's not something I seek out, to be honest. Okay. First of all, it's quite time consuming as well, and second, I'm not very good at self-advocating. I feel a bit self-conscious about it. Oh, yes. I'm the brave, bold adventurer that's walking the coast of Britain. I feel like a bit of an idiot,
I think a lot of people do find that really difficult to do. And I think there's a certain personality type who that kind of enjoys that. And that's no bad thing at all. I think I'd probably
not at all
in the same camp as yourself, where I'd sort of be a bit more low profile if I did anything like this, which I'd like to. So another question I had was kit. I'm going to go back to kit a little bit, just because I'm a little bit more interested. I know there's quite a bit of interest there. I'm not going to touch on this for too long. Now, okay. What kind of kit do you have? Like, what tent do you use at the moment for your walk? People love the tent question, so I'm going to put it in there.
That's a very topical, topical question. Yes. Okay, for England, and everything I've done so far. So yeah. for those listening, so far I've walked from Portishead south, done the Cornish Peninsula, and then across the south coast, right around East Anglia.
Yeah.
And I've so far got to Berwick-on-Tweed at the Scottish border.
Wow. Okay.
Up there. Okay. So that's kind of where I've done, and the weather. Bear in mind the weather.
Yes.
My absolute go-back-to tent is a Vango Banshee Pro 200 tent,
brilliant.
Which you can't get anymore. They discontinued them last year. I think they're brilliant. They're a little bit weighty. They weigh 2.3 kilograms.
Okay.
But they're an all-in-one. They're an all-in-one tent, so you don't have to mess around putting up poles and then putting up the fly sheet and then putting the oversheet on and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
It's an all-in-one tent. You peg it out, put in the poles, and you're done.
Brilliant.
I can erect that tent in 3 minutes flat. Which in bad weather.
That's pretty good going in bad weather.
Yeah, I mean, it was my thing. It's not everybody's cup of tea. I know a couple of coastal walkers that wouldn't touch those things with a 10-foot barge pole, but for me, it works, and I love my little Vango Banshee tent.
Brilliant.
The thing is, you can't get them anymore because Vango have discontinued them.
I'll see if I can find the alternative and stick it in the notes at the end, because I'm sure somebody will be interested.
Well, I've just upgraded. So there is another coastal walker called Christian Lewis he's just spent probably about 3 years walking literally the entire of Scotland, Islands, and everything else.
Oh, okay.
And I met up with him in 2019, and he recommended that I get a proper tent, of course.
Okay.
So I've actually invested in an MSR Access 2.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And that will be our house and home for our duration in Scotland.
Well, that'll be a tent that'll last you a lifetime, probably, because the MSR stuff's pretty hardy. But brilliant, yeah. That's useful to know. I'm sure some of those listening will really appreciate the tent advice. Mm-hmm. And in terms of second bit of kit, I'm going to ask you about which bag do you use?
Again, this one took me a while to get right because I stupidly went off manufacturers' names and prestiges.
Yes.
I use a Deuta.
Okay.
I can't remember the name or the model of it. It's the 65. It's a 65 liter one.
Okay.
Oh my God! When I had a bag with me that I took from Portishead until, where did I get the Deuta? I got it in Bournemouth, I think.
Okay. Upgrade mid route then?
It was out of desperation. The other one was just falling to pieces. And I managed to find a Camping Wholesalers, and they said, why don't you try this? It's a bit pricey, but it's a good bag. I swear down to you, I took all my kit out of the old bag, put it into this new bag, and it felt lighter. That's because it had the right support and everything else. I'll never buy any other bag than Deuta unless they do and sell out and the quality drops. But great bags. I know lots of people go for Ospreys, and they might be good, but...
Yeah. Deuta for you. Brilliant.
Yeah, definitely.
Brilliant. Thank you. And final kit-related question. Do you wear trainers or boots on the trail? Because I know this is a bit of a 50-50. A lot of people are beginning to, have done for a while. There's a lot more people wearing trainers now on the trail than boots, I think.
It is. I wear a mixture of the two. I've got a problem with my feet. I've got plantar fasciitis, when it's treated, it's fine. But when I go out on the road again, because of the weight that I'm carrying, there's no instep in the world that's going to help with that. So it will come back. And switching between trainers are great. So for my trainers, I just use a basic ASICS work for me.
Yep.
They're more basic models.
Mm-hmm.
I use a plantar instep,
which
for those of you who get a dull, numbing ache up the heel, up your heel and into your calf, it's not actually your heel that's hurting. It's probably insufficient arch support on your foot.
Okay.
And these are called walk fit. You can get them from Boots.
Yeah.
They take getting used to as well. So you've got to break them in for a week. So you've got to put them on and off. And then... I've got a set of Zambellan calf high boots for Scotland.
Oh, okay, right. So those are going to go on the next stretch then.
They are, and I'll flip between the two.
So you'll carry both as you're going, or you'll do drops or.
What I'll probably do is I'll probably start carrying them out same as I did last time, and then think, why the hell are you carrying the weight of an extra pair of trainers, you idiot? And then the trainers will end up in a bin after about the first 20 miles or something.
Oh, fair enough. So if somebody finds a fairly new pair of trainers on the route sticking out of a bin, then they know that they're
young. Oh, if you look hard enough in a city centre, there's always somebody that's of desperate need of a pair of trainers. Either that, or you can drop them off at a charity shop.
Excellent.
So I try not to stick anything in the bin unless I can absolutely help it.
Good answer. Fantastic. That's really, really good. As I said, I'm sure some people will really appreciate that. And, sorry, final question with the kit. Has the guitar, was it a guitar or a ukulele, you say, made the cut as well? Is that still going with you, or has that been given up?
No, I got a Washburn. It was a Washburn travel guitar, which itself wasn't light, but the actual case that went with it was. My thought was I can busk on the way around and earn extra money to keep me going for longer.
Yeah.
And I was so knackered at the end of each day that I just didn't have the effort to busk. So I met up with somebody in Devon, and I ended up giving it to them, and they held on to it until I could call back and pick it up
when I
finished. So they were kind enough to do that. So.
I'm assuming then you gifted away a lot of that kit, which you kind of had to drop as you went along the way then.
I mean, to be clear, it wasn't... When I say I got rid of it, so the BioLite stove is a perfect example. You know what? It's a belting bit of kit.
It's
a
great.
Really good little innovative piece of kit that's really well made.
Mm.
But for doing coastal walking in the way that I was doing it, it was just too heavy. It simply was.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of the stuff I gifted, charity shopped, gave away, left at campsites, that kind of stuff. So
Okay, brilliant. You're supporting a couple of charities as well while you're doing this. What are those charities, and why have you chosen to support these particular charities?
My thought when I set off was we're going to be walking around the coasts of three countries.
Hmm.
And I thought, three countries, three charities, two best friends, one coastline. You know, it kind of made sense. I don't know. Maybe I was a bit drunk at the time. Whatever. But anyway. I support three charities. Although I've actually changed one for this iteration. So the three that we supported when we were doing our 2018-19 part of the walk was Shelter UK, which you should all know. I work in social housing. Homelessness is a big issue for me in my professional life. So that made sense. I think it's a problem that needs sorting.
Brilliant.
The other one was a Scottish charity called Thistle Foundation. They are an enablement charity.
Okay.
For those of you that've never been to Scotland, England's infrastructure is great. There's lots of roads, there's lots of cities, and if you are diagnosed with something that's life-changing, odds on you'll be able to live in your own home, or you'll be fairly local to services that can support you in that. If you're in Scotland and you don't live near one of the major centres, so if you live on one of the islands or up near the north, your choices are to live with the condition or to move, which is no choice.
No,
Thistle kind of help support people.
Okay.
And they support veterans and kids and people that have acquired disabilities. The range of what they do is massive. So they're great. And I've worked with them for a few years. And then the final one that I fundraise for is it's a small little, it's not even a charity, it's called a community interest company, it's a CIC, it's called Bras Not Bombs, I know the founder, and what Bras Not Bombs do is they get sanitary and welfare packs to women and girls in refugee camps. So if you think a lot of these families are fleeing war, and they end up in these squalid conditions, you know. They provide things like tampons and underwear and all that kind of stuff. So those were the three that we were doing, but for this time I've decided to conclude my relationship with Shelter because we're now going into Scotland and it niggled at me. Not to go back onto the book or anything like that, but it kind of like Moose was talking in my ear going, what am I doing for my own kind? We're now supporting Bath Cat and Dogs Home. So the three that we've got are Bras Not Bombs, Bath Cats and Dogs Home, and
this is where you met Moose, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Yes. Okay, brilliant. So that obviously is quite a close to your heart charity. Now, actually, while we're on that subject, just to divert a bit. So what was the story, if you can kind of do it in a nutshell, of you meeting Moose? How did that start? Because it's a really nice story and I really enjoyed reading that. So I'm sure that others will enjoy listening to that. So I'm going to get you to go there, if that's okay.
That's fine.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks.
I work in a niche area of social housing.
Yes.
I work in something called statutory compliance. And we'd had some stuff come up, and it's basically we look after all of the safety within the home. So electrical tests, gas checking, making sure the fire stuff's all sorted.
Yeah.
And I had to work a weekend. I know. Anybody that works in social housing will be going, what's one of those? We don't work weekends. I was working a weekend.
Okay.
And then when I was coming home, I had to take a reroute because the road was closed going back to where I lived. So it took me up past Bath Cat and Dog's home.
Yeah.
And I feel a bit guilty about saying this because they're serious places, but I kind of like go in there just to look at the animals sometimes.
Yeah, window shopping.
Yeah. And as a private renter, I can't have dogs because, like lots of private renters, in your contractual agreement, in your tenancy agreement, it's no pets.
Of course, yeah. Okay.
And I kind of got chatting. I made it seem a little bit more severe than it actually was in the book. I make it seem like I was coerced into it. But actually, I got chatting to some of the staff there. Okay. And they sat me down. And I was just saying, oh, you know, I'm off work next week because I had a week's annual leave coming up.
Okay.
And they said, why don't you come up next week and really meet some of our dogs? Because we've got some that aren't actually in the main pens.
Mm.
And I thought, okay, that's great. But inside my head, I was thinking, well, you're not going to be able to get one anyway.
Yeah, and you know what happens when you go to look at dogs anyway. So it's all cats in the case of us previously. Yeah. But, I know that as well.
Of course. Yeah. But despite all that, when I went back, I thought, so I'd booked an appointment to go back on Tuesday just to have a proper look around. Anyway, I just sent an email to my letting agent asking them, you know, on the off chance, do you think, seeing as how I live in this house that's like all closed off and it's got an enclosed garden and everything, do you reckon they'd let me have a dog? And they'd be like, yeah, just make sure that it's a small to medium sized dog, okay? Small to medium sized dog.
Yeah.
And then I went back to the home and subsequently I met Moose, who was just this big, smelly
medium dog.
No, and I'm sat there going back thinking, no, it's small to medium sized dog. It's all right, I can talk this one away. If you look at him in that way, he's sort of a small dog. He's not a small dog, like not by any consideration. And then it happened really, really fast. It's like I went back again and again and again, and then before I know it, we're signing papers, and then it all just kind of, maybe call it synergy, whatever. It kind of happened.
Okay.
You know, my landlord said yes. I passed all the checks.
Yeah.
We managed to find a dog whose lifestyle matched mine with work and everything else. And I was just kind of sat on the edge of the bed with Moose about 2 weeks after I went to the dog's home. And we were both kind of looking at each other going, I don't know what happened there, but do you?
Welcome home.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. It's such a nice story there. And
I'm sure
some of the audience will really enjoy listening to that. So I thought I'd add that in there. Thank you for sharing that. And how did the landlord take the news that you'd not gone for the small and medium sized dog, but in fact gone for quite a large hound?
I was really, really nervous about it, but she kind of did what I did as soon as she saw him. She kind of like melted
on the pavement
and just went, brilliant. Oh, you're really cute.
Oh, okay, there you go. That's all right then. Got away with that. Good to know.
Okay. But she had dogs of her own. I think you're on a winner. You're already kind of halfway there anyway.
Yeah, there's the understanding there of dog ownership, I guess, isn't there, which probably helps. Brilliant. Final few questions, and then I'll start to wrap up now. So the next bit of walking you have to do, you're doing that in, you've got Scotland to complete, haven't you?
I have,
And then after Scotland, I'm assuming you're working, obviously you're going to be working your way down, down the kind of Cumbria coastline, down and around Wales, etc. Are you doing all of that in one section, or is it going to be broken up into two more sections?
I have to work with the sabbaticals that I've got.
Okay.
Now, originally, I was supposed to be doing April till October this year,
yep.
and then April till October next year.
Okay.
Because like you alluded to, the people that employ me, and I have to mention their name, Asta,
yep.
I didn't expect that. I pretty much handed my notice in, and they said, no, we'll give you sabbaticals, which is fantastic.
That's so amazing, yes.
I planned around that. One thing I find damaging to my mindset when I'm walking, or I don't know, it ruins me every single time I try doing it, is having to be in a certain place at a certain time.
Okay.
As soon as I've got an objective, a time-bound objective, that's it. I either kill myself getting there, or yes. I get there in advance and then I'm hanging around. It just doesn't work
okay.
for me.
Okay.
So actually, I sort of know where I'd like to be when I finish. I've got to be back at work for the middle of October.
Okay.
However, I've got to be on the West Coast because I actually get married at the end of September.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. So, and then we'll have 2 weeks honeymoon. So,
oh, fantastic.
So I will finish walking 26th.
Not a walking holiday for your honeymoon? I'm assuming it's going to be a feet up, something relaxing holiday.
No, we're actually, so my fiance is coming up in the camper van, so we'll actually okay. probably do a little bit of tour of some of the islands and stuff
brilliant.
Like that. So
oh,
we're
lovely.
Probably going to go up to the Hebrides and yeah. then maybe into Shetland and Orkney around there. So yeah, we'll see. So yeah, I mean, my deadline for that is my last walking day will be the 26th of September.
Okay.
So I'm going to try and get as far as I can. My hope is that I will actually manage to do all of the East Coast.
Yep.
The north coast of Scotland really isn't that big. When you look at it, it's,
no, it's not.
Quite tiny. So, yeah. And I'm hoping to be somewhere down near Skye-ish, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. I'll get to where I get to.
Of course.
And then next year, I've got my full 6 month sabbatical. So I'll be setting off early. I'll be setting off at the beginning of April next year,
okay.
which will allow me then to do the remainder of Scotland and then to get all the way around, hopefully, back to Portishead.
Should be enough time, I would have thought. And by that time as well, you would have built up, and I'm sure you have already built up quite a lot of fitness during the walk. So I'm assuming what started with 8 mile days at the beginning has extended into slightly bigger days, if I'm correct.
It has. And again, it depends upon your definition of what you walk. It's something that we touched on when we were talking before, before we started this interview. And it's the fact that, lots of coastal walkers will have their own objectives in mind as to what they want to achieve. I'll mention him again, only because if you don't know what he's about him, seriously look him up. He's a guy called Christian Lewis. And he's been walking longer than I have. I think he started in 2017. And he is literally walking every island, every inch of the coast. He is
okay.
he is proper Bear Grylls in it in Scotland.
Yes.
I mean, he spent 3 winters up there.
Wow.
And he is walking every right around everything.
Every inch of the coastline, islands and all.
Estuary, yeah, up and down estuaries and all the rest of it.
Okay,
so when he gets to the Severn Estuary, for example, he won't be crossing over into Avonmouth. He's going to actually walk all the way up to Gloucester and then back again.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so okay. he's going right in and out.
The
full-on coastal walk.
Yeah, waterside walk of the UK. That's remarkable.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Whereas me, I'll take a car, I'll take a bus, I'll take a bridge,
yeah.
I'll take a bloody transporter if it benefits me. In seriousness, some of it is the fact that I'm aware of my own capabilities. So Christian is ex-parachute regiment. I'm
okay.
not.
Yep.
He has been trained to be able to stand those conditions. I haven't. And I'm a bit of a weakling and a wimp, and I don't like rain and I don't like harsh conditions. So,
okay.
yeah, you know, when I get to Edinburgh, I'm actually looking forward to walking across the Forth Road Bridge. And crossing that way, whereas I know he'll actually walk
along the
inland
route. Yeah.
And he'll probably go into Falkirk and then back out again.
Wow.
So,
okay, yeah. So very different experience.
It is. So that being the case, when I get to the Western Isles, it depends upon which route you take. If I took the long route, it's going to take me a lot longer than it will take in the route I'll probably take, which is I'm going to take little roads and bridges and sort of shortcuts. I don't know. It's subjective, I suppose.
Okay.
That's why it's a waggy walk around Britain, not
yes.
a definitive walk around Britain.
A waggy walk around Britain, I like it. Fantastic. Okay. And final question, and then I'll wrap it up, is if you had one piece of advice, or you could do more than one piece of advice, for somebody who wanted to do what you're doing, whether that be a coastal walk or something smaller, even if it's just starting walking, and you know, because the breadth of our challenges and what we see as challenging is different for all of us, what would that advice be? Putting you on the spot here.
Well, it's I suppose I could go really, really sort of like TED talky and go, feel the fear and feel the fear and do it anyway, you know. But I suppose it's not a competition. It's not a competition. You know what? Some people, the peak of what they can achieve and the absolute, you know, the height of their own personal achievement and pride would be climbing Ben Nevis. For others, it's doing Everest. You know what? For some people, it's walking from Burnham on Sea to Western Supermare. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Don't use other people's achievements as a yardstick for comparing the value of your own to them. Wonderful. It's not about that. Yeah. Get enjoyment from what you get enjoyment out of. You don't have to do something, you know, outlandishly wild. You know, all I'd say is if it's walking that you want to do, put on your boots or your trainers or, you know, and whatever else it is, you know, you don't have to compare, and just walk, stop, you know, breathe in and, you know, breathe in the flies and everything else and, you know, bake in the sunshine, whatever it is. Don't feel you have to push yourself and do something just because somebody else has done it. And that's the proper way to do it. There is no proper way to do it.
Great advice. Great advice. Brilliant. Excellent way to wrap it up. So where can people find you online if they wanted to learn more about what you're doing? Where's the best place for people to know?
See, you're doing that thing now, and it's like I feel a bit idiotic. Oh,
the publicity
trying to promote it. Well, it's funny you should ask, but if you go to my website, if you type Chris and Moose's Waggy Walk into Google, there is enough stuff on there now that you can find us. And you can kind of follow us in your own way. So like you've alluded to, there's a book that covers the first part of our walk from Portishead down to Plymouth. Or are alternatively...
Available on Amazon, might add. Publicity,
thank you very much.
Right, you're welcome.
But also, I decided to tailor my social media in such a way that people can enjoy what I do in whatever capacity they want. So I do a daily video diary on Facebook. So there's a Facebook page there. Yeah. There's also a group if you're not interested in the diary and you just want to, I'll post stuff up periodically on there. And then on Instagram, I put up a photo diary. So every day I'll put up 10 pictures of where I've been.
Oh, brilliant.
And that's it.
Okay. Keeping it simple.
Yeah. And, you know, people can have as much or as little of me as they can stand.
Brilliant. Good to know. Okay, fantastic. Well, I'll add all that into the notes when I publish this. So there'll be a page for this with all the notes and all the references.
I really appreciate
that.
Thank you, Matt.
So it'll all be there. So good luck with the next steps starting in 10 days' time. I'm sure you are looking forward to it as it comes up, hopefully.
There's
sure.
a little bit of fear in there as
is
well.
Is there?
Don't get me wrong. There's a few butterflies going in there going, oh, here we go again.
It'll be fine. and we look forward to, well, the weather seems to be slowly picking up, I think. So hopefully the thunderstorms and hailstones and sunshine all in a day has passed by then for your sake. But good luck with it, Chris, and thank you very much for joining me on the podcast today.
No, thank you for inviting me across. It's been great talking to you, Matthew.
Brilliant. And you. Thank you so much. All right. Catch up with you soon, Chris.
Cheers. Thanks.
All right. Cheers. Take care. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. And thank you, Chris and Moose, for joining me on the podcast, for showing up and sharing your story. I found it fascinating, and I'm sure all of the listeners will too.
Don't forget to check for the latest updates on Chris and Moose's walk at facebook.com/Chris and Moose. That's Moose with an E. I've also found out since recording and putting together the episode that Chris has fallen down some stairs and hurt his ribs. Because of this, the due date has now been pushed back to the 27th of July. So, Chris, I wish you a safe recovery and cannot wait to see updates for when you're on the trail again soon. So that's it for this week. Thanks a million for joining me. It has been a blast. And I'm really excited to bring you episode 2 next week of the Distance Hiker podcast with Owen Hamilton from the little known app called Hiker, where we talk to you about this app and explore where it started and where it's going. So it's a great episode and I really, really can't wait to bring it to you. But for now, thanks again for listening. And please subscribe to the podcast on whatever podcast player you choose to use. So you're listening to the Distance Hiker podcast with me, your host, Matthew. Thanks again and see you next week.